to a TRL podcast. In this episode, we welcome TRL's Phil Martin and Imperial College London's Mazdeq Gajari to discuss the latest updates being introduced to the Sharp Motorcycle Helmet Safety Scheme and why they are needed. As a Department for Transport-funded scheme, Sharp was designed in 2007 to improve safety outcomes by independently informing motorcyclists about the safety of helmets through a simple star rating approach. Perhaps we can start by asking you to introduce yourselves.
So I'm Phil Martin, head of biomechanics at TRL and a principal consultant, and also the lead on the Sharp 2025 project.
I am Mazdeq Gajari. I am a senior lecturer in design engineering at Imperial College. My research focuses on understanding the effects of mechanical forces on the head and brain and assessment and design of head injury protection systems, such as helmets. I am an active member of standardization bodies, such as the Head Protection Committee of the European Standardization Body, where with colleagues across Europe, we are developing new helmet test methods.
So what is the Sharp project about?
So motorcyclists are amongst the most vulnerable road users in Great Britain today. They account for around about 20% of road traffic deaths in Great Britain, but only really make up about 1% of traffic on our roads. Importantly, head and brain injuries are a real leading cause of deaths and serious injuries amongst motorcyclist casualties. And improving this outcome is a real priority for the UK's Department for Transport. Now, Sharp itself is a DfT-funded consumer information scheme. It was launched in 2007, and this was designed to improve these outcomes by independently informing motorcyclists about the relative safety of their helmets, using essentially a simple star rating approach, much like Euro NCAP does for cars. The Sharp project itself was commissioned by the Department for Transport to update the test and rating protocols, which underpin the Sharp scheme, and these haven't been revised since their launch.
First launch of the Sharp scheme was in 2007, and it's been now 15 years since then that there has been far more evidence and knowledge that can help us to improve the protocols. So if I would like to add a bit more details to that, new and updated helmet test methods require three elements. One element is head injury criteria, another one is impact conditions, and the last one is new helmet technologies that can deal with these new conditions. Up until recently, all test methods have been using one single measure, which was translation of the head to translate it into head injury. But we have now a significant body of evidence that shows head rotation is as well an important indicator of brain injury. In the last 10, 15 years, there has been much more research on that, and we have now ways of measuring head rotation and translating that into risk of brain injury. Another element is impact conditions. So now we know that impact angle is influencing the head rotation. And even there is now consensus among researchers and experts on most severe and representative impact angles that we can use in testing. We are using head forms to test helmets in the lab. We know that head forms are good for measuring translation, but not for measuring rotation. There has been a substantial amount of work on improving head forms as well in terms of their characteristics that can allow us to better measure rotation of the head, for instance, coefficient of friction of the head form. And the last but not least is helmet technology. So there have been new technologies that come into market in the last 10, 15 years, which are claiming that they can better manage head rotation. Now it is the right time to put them into test and try to see what is the difference between these technologies in terms of preventing injuries that are caused by head rotation. Mm. All of this coming together now allows us to bring a new method for testing and rating helmets, which complements and builds on the previous SHARP protocols.
And that's the real motivation, isn't it, Mazdak, behind the project? You know, we've improved our understanding of the mechanics of brain and head injuries. We can identify which injuries are related to which mechanical loads, whether it's linear or rotational head injuries. We now have the ability to measure this in standardized testing and effectively rate the relative safety of motorcycle helmets, including these new, you know, new technologies that are being used in helmets to try and mitigate, reduce the risks of injuries. So if we can use these during the design process, during the certification process of these helmets, then ultimately, you know, society benefits. We can reduce the risks of head injuries during, you know, during collisions for motorcyclists, and also understand how to design better helmets for motorcyclists. And so, you know, the objective of the project, you know, TRL, you know, with support from Mazdak and his team at Imperial College London, we've been working on behalf of the Department for Transport to review this research, to combine this with collision data, and to look at the best practices currently being applied for test and assessment procedures relating to motorcycle helmet impact. Protection and testing and head injury mechanisms, and we're looking at improvements since, you know, the launch of SHARP really in 2007, and we're looking to use this new evidence base to inform an update to the SHARP test and rating protocols, basically to make sure they continue to be based upon the best available research evidence and testing practices.
How safe are motorcycle helmets today?
Well, helmets today are able to prevent significant amount of injuries as a result of standards that were in place, let's say, in the last six, 7 decades. And these standards, they require a minimum safety for helmets to enter into the market. As a result of these standards and improvement in helmets, we see that the rate of certain types of injuries have significantly reduced. For instance, skull fractures. That was a type of injury that was quite prevalent. And the consequences of that, for instance, overt bleeding as a result of skull fractures. And these are fatal types of injuries. Helmets have improved quite a lot. They can now prevent these injuries and reduce the frequency of these injuries. But this is not to say that they do not still occur. Still, they happen, and still we have to keep doing what we were doing in terms of reducing risk of skull fractures and bleeding and so on. But what we know now is that rotation of the head as well, if not more important than the effect of direct forces or translation of the head, they are as important as those causes of injuries. They can cause damage to deep structures in the brain, which can be fatal, and they can have long-term consequences on individuals' lives. And these are the things that nowadays we better understand, and these are the areas that we can do better in terms of improving the design of helmets.
It's really important to see how motorcycle helmet design has improved over that time period. You know, 15 years is a relatively short design sort of cycle to improve, you know, the safety of helmets over time. And that's where SHARP is really, you know, really supporting design engineers and the motorcycle helmet safety sort of research area and sort of pushing motorcycle helmet designs beyond regulatory minimum standards to really achieve that 5-star status and you know, improve generally the market for motorcycle helmets. And I completely take your point, you know, there is certainly still room for further improvement in motorcycle helmet designs. as we are today, particularly with, you know, the recent improvements in sort of our understanding of the rotational elements of head impacts and the influence they have on head injury risk, and some of the injuries you just discussed, such as bleeding on the brain and damage to the matter within the brain.
Yeah, and Phil, you made a great point where you distinguish between regulatory standards and rating programs. So regulatory standards, they just require the product to meet a minimum safety requirement to be allowed to enter the market. But we may have several products that have met this basic entry requirement, but we do not really understand what is the difference then between these products. And with new technologies coming out in the market, it becomes even more confusing for consumers to really see what is the benefit of certain technologies and whether if I pay a higher price for a helmet, would I get more safety or not? And this is really the job of the rating program that can show and distinguish the difference between products that have already met that entry requirement and show how better they are in doing their job. And I think this is then massively useful and informational for, informative for the consumers.
And you're right, there isn't a strong correlation necessarily between price and the way a helmet performs within the SHARP rating scheme. So really important for consumers to understand, you know, if they're concerned with safety, to understand how safe helmets are, because price does not necessarily relate to a safer helmet.
Absolutely. I think perhaps another key element of this whole activity is dissemination. So the whole work can be done in a fantastic way, and the best possible protocol can be put in place and all helmets can be rated, but this information should reach to the end users and consumers. And this is, the dissemination is an important element of the whole work.
So how does the motorcycle helmet rating system work?
So SHARP analyzes helmets that are currently available in the UK market, essentially purchasing them from retailers and distributors, much like, you know, you or I would. It currently evaluates the safety of full face helmets, you know, with an integrated chin bar, and also modular helmets with flip up visors and chin bars. It assesses this safety across a range of helmet sizes for each model that it's evaluating. The way it performs this testing and rating is against testing protocols, which test these helmets through a range of linear impact tests against flat and curbstone anvil surfaces. And with the latest updates that we're proposing, they also are looking to test helmets by, you know, implementing rotational motion of the helmet during impacts against angled surfaces. The SHARP rating protocols then look at how the helmets have been performing in terms of their injury risk during this range of linear and rotational tests, weighting the injury risks against UK collision data, effectively to rate each helmet model relative to the other models that are being tested.
Yeah, and I would like to emphasize the last bit that Phil mentioned about how rating works and what it means, so what a 5-star helmet mean. So what SHARP is doing is that it translates the measurements from all these experiments and tests on helmets into the reduction of the risk of head or brain injuries, which in itself is quite complex, but SHARP manages to put all of this into one number to say what is the reduction in the risk of head and brain injuries of certain severity. And then when they look at 5-star helmets, then it is quite clear that if the whole population, for instance, was wearing that helmet, then how many of that severity of head and brain injuries would have been reduced and how many lives would have been saved? And I think then there is a quite clear correlation and link between the star rating and reduction in number of killed and seriously injured motorcyclists on the road.
Yeah, well, on that point, Mazdak, you know, currently on Great Britain's road, there's around about, we've currently estimated around about 1,700 motorcyclists per year suffer a head injury during a collision and are either killed or, you know, very seriously injured, which is a huge number each year of motorcyclists. You know, depending on which proposed updates are eventually adopted by the Department for Transport for the SHARP 2025 protocols, you know, when we compare a five-star helmet to a one-star helmet, we're currently estimating that that would reduce the severity of injuries, head injuries, suffered by motorcyclists for around about 450 motorcyclists each year, which, you know, would otherwise have been killed or, you know, very seriously injured, which is quite a big difference. You know, we're talking a third of these motorcyclists could come out from that collision, you know, with much better outcomes than they would otherwise. So you're right to point that out. You know, ultimately what we're trying to do is to influence the way that the consumers choose their helmets so that, you know, a greater proportion of the motorcyclists and riders out there are wearing safer helmets that can, you know, improve their outcomes ultimately as an individual, if they're ever involved, you know, if they're ever unfortunate enough to be involved in a collision. I think it's also important to sort of note that, you know, SHARP recognizes that there's other elements to helmet safety. You know, the comfort of the helmet, you know, its fit, from the point of view of, you know, comfort of fit, but also in terms of, you know, how well the helmet is retained on the head during a collision. It doesn't just, you know, come off during the collision, are also really important elements for choosing, you know, a good quality and safe helmet, you know. But of course, at the moment, it's very subjective how you measure comfort and fit of a helmet, you know, and there aren't very many good examples of more objective measures for doing this. So at the moment, SHARP recommends to motorcyclists, you know, when they purchase a helmet, that they find a selection of helmets that they, you know, that they like the look of, that they're comfortable wearing, that they check that these helmets fit their head, and that they check again that the fit is comfortable for their, you know, for their needs, and then finally, once they've, you know, shortlisted the helmets that fit their head well and are comfortable, they refer back to the SHARP rating scheme to evaluate, you know, how safe each helmet is. And that's really important, you know, that safety plays a part in the decision-making process, but of course it's not the only thing that's important to motorcyclists, but it should form part of that, you know, purchasing decision-making process. Ultimately, you know, there is an important element to checking fit. You know, if it doesn't fit well during an impact, you know, regardless of how safe the helmet performs during the SHARP testing, it will not perform well during an impact if it doesn't stay on your head.
Absolutely. So you're pointing to very important element of safety, which depends on the user as well as designer. So we may do the best work to make sure that we are evaluating, assessing the performance of the helmet during impact, but that helmet should be in place when there is an impact. Hence, the chin strap itself, fitting and fastening it correctly is very important, as you mentioned. The fit of the helmet on the head to make sure that it doesn't come off the head during the collision is very important. And the comfort. So riders should really be comfortable with their own helmet. So these are some of the measures that probably is a bit even more difficult to bring into rating. And what we have discussed so far was mainly focused on the head protection performance of the helmet when it is in place. But there are some other aspects of helmet design and helmet use that are absolutely important to be considered.
Yeah, one of those, you know, in terms of helmet design, is around questions around open face helmets and how they might perform. Now, currently, Sharp doesn't assess open face helmets, just full faces and the modular helmets. But it's certainly something that we are investigating, whether open face helmets could be included in the Sharp rating scheme. There's no research out there at the moment directly comparing how open face helmets perform against, you know, full face helmets with a chin bar. But what it is important to sort of note is that impacts to the face and chin area of motorcyclists make up quite a considerable proportion of, you know, motorcyclist injuries that are suffered during collisions. So, you know, potentially including some form of assessment into the relative benefits of having a protective chin bar on a full face helmet versus, you know, not having one on an open face helmet, it could be very beneficial for consumers and informing their choices about which helmets they might want to purchase. Their sort of personal choices around what helmets they want to wear. But if they're not aware of how well they perform during a collision, because they're not currently tested by Sharp and, you know, or any other scheme for that matter, then it's, you know, maybe their purchasing decisions might be influenced by that, and, you know, that could reduce the amount of casualties that are seen on, you know, GB roads that involve impacts against the face and chin and region and result in a, you know, serious outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a great point. So facial impacts, we know that the frequency is quite high, and not only facial impacts, not only can cause fractures in the face area, they can also cause injuries far from the face that are quite fatal. So one of these injuries is basilar skull fracture, which is far from the face itself, but is caused by facial impacts. And this can lead to a certain type of bleeding that is actually fatal. It's really difficult to control those bleeding. So this is an important area for investigation and understanding how we should test, first of all, in order to understand the effects of impacts on the head, as well as how the design of helmets should be improved. And another important point here is that, in contrast to standards, rating programs can be quite agile. So they don't have to wait 20 years and then go through several committees and many meetings so that a change can be made in a standard. Rating programs can be more agile. They can incorporate new and state-of-the-art biomechanics knowledge, design knowledge, sensing technologies in order to improve how they are rating products. And as a result, it will drive designers and manufacturers to bring into market safer products. And an example, as you just mentioned, is really protection against facial impacts.
What are the next steps?
Well, additional research is required to fill some of the remaining evidence gaps that we found during the Sharp 2025 project. A key area for improvement is head injury criteria. So as I explained, these criteria, they build the bridge between a physical quantity that we can measure in the lab and a head or brain injury that would occur in the real world. So in order to improve our injury criteria and build this bridge, we will need more data. And this data should provide both pieces of information that I just mentioned. So those physical measurements that we can measure in the lab and the type and severity of head and brain injuries that we would see in motorcyclist collisions. I would say another potential area for improvement in future is the inclusion of novel computational methods in order to better evaluate the risk of brain injuries in protocols. So the current injury criteria that I just mentioned, they are based on direct reading of the sensors that we use in the lab. Like with the headphones, we have these tiny accelerometers that are measuring acceleration, for instance, and we directly use these signals to interpret the risk of brain injury. But as you would agree with me, our brain is far more complicated than just a metal or some other material made mannequin. Computational modeling nowadays can allow us to really incorporate complex mechanical, biomechanical properties, anatomy of the head into digital models of the human head and brain. So at Imperial College, we have developed such models, and there are fantastic colleagues across the world that they have developed such models. And one area for improvement, potential improvement in future, is to find consensus between all these digital models of the human head in order to introduce them into rating protocols and potentially into standards, so that we can have a better measurement of different types of brain injuries and their risks.
Yeah, Maslak, one of the challenges really with that is that we've got, let's say around about a dozen computational models of the head and brain from different researchers across the world, international researchers. And the real challenge is to understand, what these brain injury models are showing us, how it relates to the different pathologies of head and brain injuries that are experienced specifically by motorcyclists. And then, as you say, drawing that link between the test data that we have and that real world data to come up with a meaningful injury risk curve. And that's quite a challenge because, there isn't consensus about which brain injury models are showing us the most relevant data, most accurate data for motorcycling head injuries.
Yeah, that is true. That's a great point. We recently did a comparison between, I think it was 10 or 12 different head models. And interestingly, at a higher level, it appears that all models are agreeing in terms of predicting the key forces, more precisely the deformation of the brain in impact conditions that are representative of those that we see in helmeted impacts. But as you rightly said, the key challenge is drawing this link between what these models are predicting and the actual injury. And in order to build that link, we need good quality data. So now we are in the data era, and really what we need to enable us to make a step change into the ways that we are measuring risk of brain injuries with digital twins, with computational models, is using data, real world data, in order to train our models, in order to build risk functions for our models. And I would say this is a major area, this is a major shortcoming that we have at the moment. So probably the best work that was done in terms of motorcyclist accidents and producing data for training injury criteria was done back in 1999, and that was COST 327, which was the basis of SHARP 2007. And that work managed to produce around 20 cases, but we know that 20 is not a good enough number. And I really hope that in future we will have a way of sharing expertise, sharing data between researchers, between institutions, between authorities, to allow us to build up bigger data sets that can help us all to better understand the link between the biomechanics of head collisions and the injury to the brain.
Yeah. No, I share your hope as well, Maslak. I think good quality data is fundamental to meaningful metrics, essentially. And that can inform not just SHARP, but head injury risk metrics, in regulation, for motorcycle helmets, and also for other modes of transport, for example, cycle helmets, e-scooter helmets, you know, all this sort of feeds in to that, and the approaches you take feed into that sort of biomechanics skill set that can be applied across lots of really important parts of sort of the transport safety agenda, essentially. Looking more at the sort of short term, you know, about what are the next steps, ultimately there remains a few evidence gaps we need to fill for the SHARP 2025 test and assessment protocols. So we're hoping to have a series of you know, some more research to finalize these protocols. You know, once those protocols are finalized, we can, you know, roll out the program and start testing the helmets, that, you know, the motorcycle helmets that are in the UK market. But key to all of this, as Mazdak said earlier, is sort of engagement with industry, with, you know, rider representative organizations and other stakeholders such as that. But most important is engagement with the consumers. This is a key area we're, you know, looking to work on in the future. And this engagement really must occur before any, you know, purchasing decisions are made, ultimately, so that, you know, helmet safety features within this process, and as part of this decision-making process. And, it, and it's really important that, you know, it's not something that the consumer looks at. They've, you know, they've purchased their helmet and then they look up, oh, I wonder what rating this is, when they remember to look it up. It forms part of that decision-making process. And, you know, we will be working closely with industry and you know, rider representative organizations to try and, you know, get that really early engagement with consumers. Okay, well, that leaves me just to say thank you to Mazdak for his support during the project and this podcast, and also to the DFT for their funding for this project.
Well, it has been a great journey. So thanks, Phil and TRL, for involving us in this project. And I would also like to thank Dr. Xiancheng Yu, who supported me in this project at Imperial College.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you'd like to listen to another TRL podcast on a variety of transport-related topics, please visit this platform. We hope to see you again very soon.